what I want any old time. Welcome to Backbone Radio. This is Joshua Scharf sitting in this week. Happy to be in the captain's chair, and we've got an action-packed show for you this evening. We'll be leading off the show talking to David Goldman. You know him possibly as a blogger and columnist for the Asia Times Online, a blogger for PJ Media, blogs under the nom de blog Spengler, and has one of the most wide-ranging and comprehensive intellects that I've come across in the blogging world. Be a real pleasure to talk with him. He's got a couple of books out on the market and has spent considerable time recently blogging about Iran and the Middle East from a strategic perspective, not just from the perspective of those individual countries. So it's a pleasure to be joined right now by David Goldman. Spengler, how are you doing this evening, David?
Very well, Joshua, and thank you for that very kind introduction.
Well, it's been reading your stuff for years, like I mentioned to you off the air, and frankly, it's just always engaging and always an original take that you don't see someplace else. Tell us a little bit about your book that I have been reading this weekend called How Civilizations Die and Why Islam is Dying Too.
Joshua, the question I try to answer in this book is, why do we see such a huge amount of irrationality, in fact, suicidal behavior, on the part of enemies of the United States? There's something fundamentally new about what we see. The Japanese kamikazes were willing to kill themselves, but we haven't seen people willing to strap on bomb belts and kill children in large numbers in the past. The idea of targeting civilian populations, children in particular, and the willingness of literally tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people to commit suicide in this process is a totally different and arresting and scary turn of events. So my question is, what makes people give up on life and act in a suicidal way?
And you address not only why individuals give this up, although it's related, but why civilizations, in effect, give up on wanting to continue to survive. This isn't the first time in history that we've seen civilizations commit demographic suicide.
No, the frightening thing is that small civilizations die for all kinds of reasons. They chop down too many trees, they get overrun by invaders, they catch the wrong kind of plague bug. Large civilizations destroy themselves because they stop wanting to live anymore. And if there's one red thread that goes through history, it's that peoples who have a sense of their continuity and their immortality are the ones who like living. And the pagan civilizations, which worshipped themselves, their own ethnicity, their own cleverness, at some point realized they weren't as clever as they thought or as glorious, and give up on life. And that was as true of the classical Greeks as it is, tragically, of today's Europeans.
Yeah, you mentioned that this is the fourth great civilizational die-off. There was one that was, in essence, prehistorical, not quite, but right at the fringes of our beginning of recorded history. And then the Greeks and the Romans engaged in this sort of birth dearth, which was a completely voluntary thing.
Well, one of the things that you don't want to do in a civilizational catastrophe is stand too close to it, particularly when nuclear weapons are involved. Because although most of the world is in fact doing well, I don't mean to sound like a pessimist, I once calculated that two-thirds of the world's population live in countries which are experiencing high rates of economic growth. But what's happening to a lot of the other third is a doozy, particularly to the Arab world and the Persian world and the Pashtun world, which is in a catastrophic decline. The willingness of these countries to destroy themselves, particularly a country like Iran, which really sees no future for itself, and the availability of nuclear weapons are a really frightening combination. If any of your listeners think that they're immune for it, they should remember that nuclear weapons can be put into suitcases or into freighters, and they can be detonated in the United States. And if Iran has them, we're going to be picking a lot of uranium fragments out of our tail, and we'll have a lot of casualties to show for it.
Well, you know, in the past, this has not boded well for, as you say, the civilizations nearby. When the Germans, and I don't know if you use this example, but there's one of the authors in I can't remember his name, but he came out with a book a few years ago called Europe's Last Summer. His thesis, in effect, was that the Junkers, the German traditional German ruling class, started World War I out of fear of or recognition that they were getting swamped by the German middle class and by these folks who were coming up, and that they simply weren't going to be maintaining their way of life anymore. That the French, we've seen this in Europe before, and we've seen it in the way that the way that other societies have behaved. That this is the most dangerous period of time when they're on the cusp and realizing that things are slipping away from them.
Well, Joshua, if we take this fast forward and look at Iran right now, there's a lot of debate about whether sanctions or persuasion or some other kind of action short of a military strike will persuade the Iranian leadership to give up on the idea of acquiring nuclear weapons. I think that's delusional, and I think military action ultimately will be necessary, and in my view, the sooner the better, and I'll explain why. Iran is a country where you have essentially one resource, which is hydrocarbons. The government owns it all, so it doesn't matter what the people think. You have the mullahs who've got the guns and have the money, and they can persuade, they can force the people of Iran to do almost anything except have children. So the people of Iran have voted their disgust with the theocratic government with their wombs. They've simply stopped having children. Nothing like this has been observed in recorded history. This really is a new thing. You've got a country where the typical family size was 7 kids only a generation ago. Now it's 1.5 going down to 1.25, according to the UN data, which means Iran disappears as a country. It ages, grays, and disappears in 2 or 3 generations. The Iranians know that, and they have their attitude is use it now or lose it. If we don't establish our Shiite empire now while we still have a young population, we'll have no chance to do it at any point in the future.
And you mentioned, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So they're willing to stake everything on a roll of the dice, same as Hitler in the 1930s, exactly the same mentality.
And you mentioned that there are a fair number of, while their oil appears to be approaching its end, there appear to be resources nearby, as you say, that have Shiite populations. And the other countries there are feeling a little bit threatened. We see the Azerbaijanis edging away from them. Obviously, the Gulf states have always felt the threat from across the Gulf.
The Gulf states, the Arabs, have been begging the United States to whack the Iranians for years. We know that from the WikiLeaks documents. They are more threatened in the short term than anybody else. In the case of Iran, I would try to imagine Adolf Hitler sitting in the bunker in April 1945. Instead of a pistol, he's got a nuclear weapon. Will he use it? Probably.
And in fact, you mentioned that we came across this in the we came very close. In a similar situation we didn't realize it at the time, but in the mid-1980s, when we were putting the Pershings in Germany, and the Soviets were realizing that their time was almost up as well, that the threat comes from not beating somebody by enough, not by trying to beat them by too much.
Well, Joshua, I had the privilege to interview some of the inside players in the Cold War, for example, Herbert Meyer, who was a special advisor to the chairman of the Central Intelligence Agency, Bill Casey, at the time, and Orrin Bailey, who was special assistant to President Reagan for National Security Affairs. And their perception is that exactly at the point in the late 1970s, when the Soviet Union understood that it was reaching its best use-by date, it became extremely dangerous. It saw the window closing in which it had the capacity to assert its dominance in Europe and the world, and so it was willing to take ever greater risks and become all the more aggressive. We know that the Russians had a battle plan which would have led an attack on Western Europe with the first use of nuclear weapons. They basically would have wiped everybody out and then marched in. the fact that the United States had the gumption to install medium-range nuclear-tipped missiles in Germany in 1983 turned the balance against the Russians. What most people don't know is that the Russians declared a nuclear alert, and there was considerable risk of going to nuclear war. There was a small Cuban Missile Crisis at the time.
I tell you what,
fortunately, the Iranians don't have nukes yet.
We're going to have to pick this up on the other side of the break. Our guest, David Goldman, columnist Spengler for PJ Media and the Asia Times Online.